Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we're going to talk about a film called Nope. It's by Jordan Peele. You've probably heard of it. Maybe you've even seen it. But what you haven't heard or seen is the correct film analysis of what's going on in this movie. I'm going to discuss all of the occult symbolism of the film. There's so many connections here. This is going to be a big show. It's going to be a massive show. Lots to unpack. We're going to, of course, go through the plot spoiling version, right? So if you haven't seen the movie, you better go watch it and come back. There's a lot of connections to the topics I presented in my alien books, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. Get it on Amazon. I narrated it on Audible. Get a signed copy on Gumroad. So many choices for you. Because all the topics from that book could be found, well, not all the topics, but some of the topics in the book could be found on this movie. And of course, this is my subjective take on it, but I'm not wrong. So there's that. So stick with me here. This is going to be a long one. Without further ado, right? The movie. Is it worth... I always like to do a little preamble before we get into the plot and the spoiling. Is this movie worth watching? Absolutely. One of my favorites. I believe my Letterboxd review was that it was top five alien movies of all time. I stand by that. And I would actually... And look, I know in the past, not too long ago, maybe a month ago, I said I was never going to a movie theater again. The survey came back in, and that was a lie. I went back to the movies. I saw Top Gun 2, and then I was like, okay, here I am, back in theater life again for me. And I'm actually glad I did it for this movie, because it's actually, I would argue, better served on a large movie theater. Preferably, I would go in IMAX. If it was my first time watching, I would go see it in IMAX, if you can handle the IMAX sort of thing. Who's in it? Daniel Kaluuya. I think I mispronounced his name. Kaluuya. Daniel Kaluuya. He is playing a character, a horse wrangler, by the name of Otis Jr., a.k.a. OJ. He is from Jordan Peele's previous movie, Get Out, which I also covered on this show, I believe, several years ago. It's also in Black Panther, which I also covered on the show, I believe, back when Chadwick Boseman died. Keke Palmer, she plays OJ's sister, Emerald. Steven Yeun, he plays Jupe, or, you know, short for Jupiter. He's Glenn from The Walking Dead. We got Michael Wincott as the director named Antlers. He's like the bad guy in every movie you've ever seen. He's got that gravelly voice. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, The Crow. And of course, Keith David. He plays OJ's dad, Otis Sr. He's from the legendary John Carpenter films. They Live, The Thing. He was in Platoon, Requiem for a Dream, another classic. I know it's pretty, but I didn't take it out for air. And Men at Work, my favorite. Men at Work, great movie. One of the most slept on movies of all time. Now, this film, to me, is kind of a blend of... It's clearly Jordan Peele's attempt at getting this Spielbergian blockbuster vibe going on. Very Jaws-esque. Which, I actually like Jordan Peele's movies, all of them so far. Didn't like Jaws. I know. Sacrilegious. Especially for a big horror nerd such as myself. But I thought Jaws was crap. I didn't see it when it came out, to be fair. I saw it just recently, a couple years ago. And I was like, oh, that's it? People were scared of this? But, you know, I'll give it its proper respect. It probably was fantastic back in the day. It also has a blend of creepiness, like the Scarlett Johansson film Under the Skin. And you'll notice some of these some of these films were featured in my second Alien book, Use Your Illusion 2. And I'm showing three fingers saying two. Use Your Illusion 2, I talked about Under the Skin and The Thing. I talked about the John Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy. And Under the Skin was apparently one of Jordan Peele's favorite films. Same for me. Now, another bonus, if you go to watch this in the theater, which, again, I will highly advise, you also get a great trailer of a Christopher Nolan film dropping in July 2023 about Oppenheimer. Yes, a subject I plan on doing a show about. The atomic bomb. Very important to the history of Illuminati symbolism and synchronicity and all that. When you get into some of the big names of the godfathers of conspiracy, they've talked about this incident for good reason. So we've got a lot to unpack about this movie. It's going to be a marathon, so strap in. Subscribe to the podcast. You know, subscribe in case you got to bail on me because it's going to be long. I'm going to blow your mind with this mega banger. You got to hang in there until the end, of course, because I'm going to go through the whole film, give you a little bit of information, and then the second half of the show is going to be the conclusion where I go through, we're going deep, homeboy. We're going through all the topics, and I'm going to make more sense out of it. And by the way, quick plug, quick announcement, this episode, according to my math, if I'm watching my statistics correctly, this is going to be the episode that gets us to clear 10 million downloads on this podcast. Oh, yeah. 10 million downloads. Thank you. That's all thanks to you for listening, for dropping great reviews, for sharing with friends, for subscribing and checking in every week to listen to my crazy theories. And this is such a big deal that my host, Spreaker, what they do is they've got, when you put your podcast hosting through Spreaker, they've got little digital trophies for all these little milestones. You know, oh, you published 50 episodes, here's a trophy. Oh, 100 episodes, here's a trophy. Oh, you got 10,000 downloads, here's a trophy. 100,000, and so on and so on. Well, 5 million is the biggest trophy they got. We cleared that a while ago. So 10 million, I'm going to clear it. I'm going to ask them again to make a trophy for me, for us, a conspiracy theories and unpopular culture trophy. They're not going to do it. I already know they won't. I don't blame them. I wouldn't if I was them. And I can't be the first one to hit 10 million downloads. That can't be, right? But I just think it's odd that, and maybe, I don't know. I mean, I got into this in 2014. It's a long time. So, anyhow. And truth be told, I actually probably cleared 10 million a while ago. I switched over to Spreaker about 4 or 5 years ago, so there's a lot of statistics that aren't included. So, but it doesn't matter. We're making a big deal out of this, okay? Just play along with me, all right? So, yeah, big announcement. Thank you. Big to do. I will be bragging and posting about this everywhere. Also, follow me on Instagram because we're going to have some images. I know it's in the theaters, right? Hard for me to get. Usually I put like film clips and I get nice polished images from the movie I can screenshot, but obviously I can't do any of that here. But I did get some images. So if you go to my Instagram, instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt, go there, like, subscribe, follow, and check out the post for this movie. And you can click through the images as we're talking about them. They're plot spoiling images too. So be warned of that. And without further ado, we're going to get into the film now. If you haven't seen it, see you later, buddy. Go watch it and come back. If you have seen it, follow along, my friends. Let's get into it. Here's the movie. After the trailers and so on, the first thing right off the bat, first thing we see, we're going deep into the realm of the esoteric. We see a Bible verse on the screen, Nahum 3:6, which I'm going to tell you the truth here, folks. I had no idea that was a Bible verse. I didn't know that was a book in the Bible. I was like, what is this? I thought maybe it was like some Gnostic, Coptic scripture or something. I don't know. So they put the verse on the screen. Obviously, I can't give you the exact verbatim or the version they used because, again, this was me taking notes on my phone in the theater I have no photos to go off of. This is all off of memory, which another caveat here, another disclaimer. This is my memory of how this film went. I could be wrong on a couple details, so don't hold that against me. But the Greek, I did write on my phone, Nahum 3:6, all right? And if you look in the Greek Orthodox Study Bible, to me, the definitive source for my religion of Orthodoxy, it says, I shall cast abominable filth upon you according to your uncleanness, and I shall cause you to be a public example. Now, the Orthodox Study Bible app, if you hit the info thing, it'll tell you it's a study Bible, tells you what it means. It says, this verse is about the final judgment against the great harlot, an image of all that is evil, found in Revelation 17 through 18. So I said, okay, let's hear more about the great harlot of evil. So I go to Revelation 17 through 18, and it's this crazy verse about how there's this scarlet woman, the whore of Babylon, sitting on the scarlet beast that has 7 heads and 10 horns. She was arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Now, if you've been with me for a while, you already know where we're going with this, all right? You know where we're going. This is the Scarlet Woman, the Whore of Babylon, infamously shown to us through Katy Perry in her Super Bowl performance years ago, who came out atop the beast, just like the tarot card shows us. And in my first Alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Illusion 1, the one I went on the great wrestler Chris Jericho's podcast to talk about, in that book, I talked about these occultists, Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, and how Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard were trying to evoke this same Scarlet Woman, the Whore of Babylon, because they specifically wanted to bring about the end of Christianity, usher in the New Age, which was Crowley's Aeon of Horus. And guess what the symbol for the New Age was going to be? The Age of Crowleyanity. The symbol is a UFO. You see how it all fits together? Well, we're going to come back to this in the conclusion, because we got a lot of movie to get through here, all right? And purple, that will matter too. I'm telling you, there's so much. So just to recap, one frame into this movie, we're already seeing connections to the occultist Aleister Crowley. Okay, so we get past the first frame, good night, with the Bible verse, and we see it's nighttime, there's a house at the ranch, and above it, a perfect triangle of stars. Now we're going to hit this again in the conclusion, we're going to go into this, but it's important, because in my Alien books, I'm talking about how film and mental focus will be used to manifest aliens. All right. And in this analysis of this movie, I'm going to balance getting bogged down in the symbolism versus keeping this plot moving. All right. So again, you got to stick around for the conclusion where we're going to go real deep into this. So don't get your panties in a bunch if we don't go too deep into some of these things that you're going to hear about in the movie. Oh, Isaac, you missed the whole thing. Yeah, wait till the conclusion, all right? We're getting there. And the ranch, which I found this interesting, looking it up after the movie, it's called Agua Dulce, which was in Tom Petty's video for You Got Lucky, which holds a special place in my heart. It's one of my first memories. As a child, I was born in 79, and I was looking at the time frame of the music video, I was 3 or 4, living here in Allentown, PA, and the video is like this Mad Max dystopian desert science fiction, and Tom Petty and the band, they find this tent, this dusty old tent, they go in there, and there's TVs on there, And I rewatched it just for because I was researching this, and I said, "Oh, Argo Dulce was in that video." It's always in the back of my mind, one of my first formative memories as being a human being. And I rewatched the video, and wouldn't you know it, when Tom Petty and the band goes into this tent in the film or in the music video, all these TV screens, they're playing alien movies. Yes, all of them. There was, I looked it up. It says it was Galactica 1980. I don't even know what that was. Some show, I guess. And then there was some other UFO clip. But I thought, well, isn't this bizarre? Now, if you lump in all these ideas and theories about how the desert is the great teacher, when I talked about this in my book on Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. I did an analysis on that years ago. That's why Charles Manson took his family out to the desert. The desert's the great teacher, and the desert is where a lot of this UFO activity can happen. Anyway, moving along. With they introduce us to the characters. We got OJ, right? That's Daniel Kaluuya, and his father, Otis Sr., played by Keith David. And they're doing their ranch hand thing, right? They're handling some horses, moving horses around. And then the storm sort of comes in, and OJ's looking up at the skies. He's like, oh, what's going on here? And at this point, I'm thinking, okay, it's like a hailstorm. And a bunch of debris is hitting the ground and everything. You can hear it, pling, 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 you know? And OJ, the storm passes, and he looks back at his father, Otis Sr. Sr.'s on top of this white horse. And he's like, hey, Pops, whatever. Pops is non-responsive. And then he slumps over and falls off the horse. Oh, snap. So he got blasted with some storm debris. OJ rushes him to the hospital. He ain't going to make it. All right. We see him in the hospital. Senior is DOA. It's murder. And, you know, the sky did the murder right now. Now, what's curious from the symbolic occult conspiracy theorist perspective, Dad, Otis Sr., was riding the white horse. Okay, the white horse, of course, being the first horse in the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Yes, again, hitting it in the conclusion. And what's curious is that they show him, and his right eye, I believe it was his right eye, had this slice through it, right? You've got the symbolism of the all-seeing eye. This is going to be one of many all-seeing eye symbolisms in this movie. Is that a word? Symbolisms? You know what I'm saying. Doesn't matter. But OJ gets an x-ray of his dad's head. And sure enough, there was an object, a circular object, right at the base of his head. It's kind of hard to show you on the little video I'm making, but there's a circular object. We find out it's a nickel. All right? So a nickel got lodged in his brain, right in the center of it. Now, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but the location of that nickel, it was in the pineal gland. That's right. The all-seeing eye. My goodness. Jordan Peele is, he's woke. He's illuminate confirmed. He might be all these things. I'm going to put the photo. That was one photo I was able to secure on my Instagram, instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt, link in the show notes as always. So the credits start. Finally, the credits start, and we see this video. You know, the old timey video of there's a black guy on a black horse. Like, there's a few frames just repeated of him riding the horse. It's called The Horse in Motion. Very famous clip. I took a class in college on the introduction to film, and I thought we covered it. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, years go by and your memories get a little fuzzy, but I swore we covered it. And, yeah, it's very important in cinematic history. It was the first example of film way back in 1878. And they did it to analyze the slow motion gait of a horse. And right off the bat in my notes, I said, oh, shit, Jordan Peele is trying to say that films created aliens. The exact plot of my two books. Is it true? We're going to revisit that. And I'll let you decide. I chose my reality, and you know where that is. Pumping up my big ego. So the plot unfolds. We find out OJ, Otis Sr., his father, and OJ's sister, Emerald M., they're all part of this family called the Haywoods. And they have a business using horses in film called Haywood's Hollywood Horses, Triple H. Now, we hear them talk about the Horse in Motion clip from 1878. And they show it to some audience because they're doing a sales pitch for their business. And guess what they say? Guess what they say? They're like, hey, you know, the guy riding that horse, the first film clip ever, the most important film ever. What's the name of that guy riding the horse? They say it's Alistair Haywood. Alistair. What are the odds? What are the odds he would choose the name Alistair? I'm going to tell you right now, Jordan Peele knew. He knew. He knew what he was doing. Because, of course, it's Aleister Crowley. Now, was Aleister Crowley a black guy riding a horse? No. I don't think he was even alive back then. Doesn't matter. it's an Easter egg towards the occult. And if you go online, sort of to support my point, it appears that the name Alistair Haywood is completely fabricated. He came up with this for the movie. They don't actually seem to know the name of the rider of the horse, which is crazy. They actually know the horse's name of Sally Gardner. They know more about the horse than the black man riding it. One website says they think it was this rider named Dom or G Dom, but the G was a printed letter on the film stock, so it wasn't accurate. Some say it's Gilbert Dom. Some people say they have no idea. Regardless, Alistair Haywood was a fictional name that they created for this film. Why? Why Alistair? Because I think Jordan Peele is connecting in a very subtle way Alistair Crowley to Jack Parsons to the Whore of Babylon to the apocalypse to the UFOs to the films manifesting the UFOs. That's what I think. Next, here's another main scenery setting of the film, this Western theme park called Jupiter's Claim. Now, when I was watching the movie, I wrote down Jupiter's Clam. I thought it said clam. I was wrong. But Emerald and OJ, they go to this office of the Jupiter Clam, and right away, they open the door to go inside the office where Glenn works, right? That's, what the hell is his name? Goes by the name Jupe. The dude who plays Glenn on The Walking Dead, Steven Yeun. He's the manager of the Jupiter's Clam. And in his office, OJ and Emerald, they go in there to talk to him. And they close the door, and guess what's right there? A big old owl. Yes, the owl. Symbolizing Athena. Symbolizing wisdom. Symbolizing supernatural intelligence. And transformation. Bohemian Grove. They love the owl. You'll see it all over their symbolism. Hell, they do a big mass sacrifice to a giant owl at Bohemian Grove, the cremation of care ceremony. Huh. What could possibly happen in this movie? Oh, gee, I don't know. Is that foreshadowing of what's going to happen? The answer is yes. The connection here is that OJ and M, they tried to keep their dad's business with the horses afloat. But the problem is one of their horses got a little nutty when someone put this giant reflective sphere in its face. And they lost that job and they started getting into financial trouble. So they started selling horses to Jupe down at Jupiter's Claim. So OJ and M, they're going in there and they're like, look, we want to find a way to start buying our horses back. Jupe, he's mad weird about it. He's like, sure. Yeah. We can talk about me selling your horses back to you. Very weird. Foreshadowing. And then we get a flashback to Jupe's origin story as a child actor, which is pretty nuts. As a child actor, he was in this sitcom called Gordy's Home. And it's about a family who owns a chimp. Kind of like Alf, but with a chimp. And we get a teaser at this point in the movie. Later they revisit, but we get a teaser of what happened on the set of this sitcom. And all we know is that Gordy the Chimp went nuts, killed some actors. Joop made it out alive. That's all we know. And at this point, I'm like, okay, is this going to become an analogy of aliens using humans as slaves, the way the humans use animals as slaves? You got the horse business, you know, using the horse as a business prop to make money, using this chimp, subduing it to make money for entertainment. Both of these things are for entertainment, by the way, the horses and the chimp. And then we find out Joop, who should be pretty traumatized by witnessing the murder of all his coworkers by this chimp, is oddly proud of the show. He's got a full-on museum hidden in his office that he shows to certain guests for the right price, right? He rents it out. He rents it out to some person for $50,000 for one night because he's got all these props behind glass and posters from the movie. He seems very happy about the show. I mean, given that he saw a chimp massacre his coworkers, it's kind of strange. But he shows OJ and them, he shows them the little museum, and he's, you know, seems cool about everything. And that's about it. Then back on the ranch, OJ and them, they see they're back on the ranch, they see the electricity flickering a little bit. Bop, 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 bop. Bam. First UFO sighting. Bam. We got a teaser. Oh, snap. It's moving around above the ranch in those clouds. We find out that this UFO has been at the ranch. It's been snatching up horses. It's been spitting out metal debris. Like, I guess it couldn't digest the metal, right? And it was spitting it out. That's where the nickel came from. They got buried in Dad's head. And you'll see one of the horses gets a big old key stuck in its big old booty from the debris from this UFO. Also, when the UFO shows up, take a listen, because you'll hear this very odd and eerie sound, very like a buzzing, humming, like a, I don't know how to do it even. It's a terrifying sound. And it made me think of 2001: A Space Odyssey, because you'll recall when the monolith shows up, we get a very similar terrifying buzzing, I think they call it like bees, the bee sound. So there's a parallel to 2001, one of many in this movie. So now OJ and M, they're intrigued. So they decide to set up surveillance cameras on the ranch to cash in and document this thing. And I got to give a shout out to my man, Jimmy the Jackhammer. He came with me to see this movie. I had a little too much coffee. I had to get up and take a leak. All right. And he filled me in on what happened. They went to this electronics store to buy their video surveillance. And they say stuff about how, oh, we're going to get this thing on film and we're going to get rich and famous and be on Oprah and all this stuff. So clearly, they want to monetize on this. There's apparently no discussion about how, damn, this thing killed Dad. Damn, what if it's after us? Damn, it's eating the horses. None of that. It's, let's film it and get paid. All right? Kind of sleazy. And the guy from the electronics store, Angel, his name is Angel, he sets up the ranch with the surveillance cameras. And you hear a conversation between OJ and Angel. And Angel turns out to be a conspiracy theorist. Yes. He's a bit of the comedic relief in the show. And he talks about how, he's like, yeah, they're lying to us about these things. They changed the name to UAPs, from UFOs to UAPs, which is one of the main, I think it was in the first chapter of my first Alien book. Why did they do that? They changed it from UFO to UAP because it's the first step in every piece of propaganda. You change the words first. UFOs, that term has too much baggage behind it. They got to change it because they're grooming the public for the reality of these things. And the reality of these things is very weird. It's a phenomenon. It's not extraterrestrial aliens, I don't think. It's interdimensional aliens. And it takes, it's very quantum level talk. It takes a conscious link. It takes mental manifestation and focus to bring these things into our existence. Some would say occult rituals, magic rituals. Kenneth Grant started the Typhonian Ordo Templi Orientis, a magical order devoted to doing magic rituals to make contact with entities from another dimension. That's what Aleister Crowley was doing in the Amalantra workings. That's what Jack Parson was doing in the Babylon workings, calling upon the Whore of Babylon, the Scarlet Woman, to bring about the end of the age, the apocalypse, the revelation. So much, so much. So yes, Angel, he's the conspiracy guy. He even talks about the Navy clip, which is on the covers of my Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 books. He says, why did they change it to UAP? They changed it because no one cares. If you call it a UFO, people care. If you call it UAP, nobody cares. He says, and I quote, Ancient Aliens History Channel, watch that shit. And this leads into a bigger question that I don't have the answers for. Is Ancient Aliens grooming us to believe in UFOs because there's some truth to it? Or is it a deception? All right. We can unpack that name later on a different show. We can unpack that topic on a different show. But interesting choice of this character's name of Angel. It's also foreshadowing a bit, again, in the conclusion. So we see OJ, he's got that reflective ball thing that made the horse go nuts earlier. Must be some kind of video shooting equipment. He seems to be trying to teach the horse to be comfortable with the equipment so he doesn't go nuts again. He gets some visitors. He thinks they're aliens, and I'm watching the movie. I'm like, oh, these are aliens for real. But it turns out to be trickery, very M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong-ish. It's just some pranksters. And you're left wondering, like, where the hell did this come from? Why are there kids pranking them? Why are they wearing alien things? Why are they messing with the ranch? Like, none of it makes any sense. So M, she calls a Hollywood director, that's Antlers. Weird name, right? She calls Antlers to see if she can get him to come document this thing, again, presumably for money. And it's interesting because he's watching. Oh, you know what? I missed a part. Hang on. Back up. I got my notes out of order here. So Angel sets up the camcorders, the surveillance camcorders, and he's watching it remotely, even though he's not supposed to. And he calls, naughty, naughty, he calls Emerald one night because there's a big praying mantis covering one of the cameras. Because he purposefully had two cameras set up to focus on the night sky in one area, meaning they thought, what if the UFO knocks down one of the cameras? Well, you need the backup to film it also, because they know that it does this sort of thing. Because the phenomenon, kind of like you see on the Skinwalker Ranch, it's the trickster. It's the green man. It knows how to shut down the cameras when you're trying to focus in on it. So Angel, who's a conspiracy theorist, knows this, and he sets up two cameras. Well, the cameras get tripped one night, and Angel's watching remotely, even though he's not supposed to. Naughty, naughty. He calls Emerald, says, hey, the cameras are going off. And she's like, yeah, I know. Why are you watching even? He's like, don't worry about that right now. He's like, there's a praying mantis on the one. You got to knock it down. And they can't make it happen. They see the UFO again. Very disturbing. So at this point, Emerald's like, I got to get a hold of a director. She calls Antlers, the Hollywood director, to see if she can get him to come document this thing. Well, what's Antlers doing when she calls him? He's watching compilations of all-seeing eye photos on a loop. Yes, of animal eyes, just one frame after another. I wish I could have that video clip for you, but I can't. I couldn't find it anywhere. And he's kind of disinterested. So finally, we go back to this Gordy's Home sitcom with the chimp. And we get to see the full incident. And it's very terrifying. I'm not going to do it justice, but it's a very terrifying clip. And you see what happened was, on the set of the sitcom, there were some balloons for Gordy's birthday, and they started popping, pop, pop, pop. And Gordy freaks out, unpredictably freaks out, and he starts killing everybody. Jupe as a boy, he's under the table, he's watching all of it, and he's taking it all in. He's crying. Bah. Now, what's interesting is that, and what's interesting, there's some 2001 Space Odyssey parallels here, because the chimp's killing everybody, and then at the end, it's like covered in blood, and Jupe's watching all this, and he sees this shoe levitating on its end, sort of balancing on its toes. They don't explain what that is. It's weird as hell, but he sees it, and then he sees the chimp, and the chimp sees him. So Gordy comes over, and we're like, oh, damn, he's about to get it. But Gordy the chimp reaches out and fist bumped Jupe. And the way Jordan Peele framed it was exactly like Michelangelo's creation of Adam with the fingertips touching, right? What does this mean? It means evolution. This is the same idea presented in 2001 A Space Odyssey. That's what that movie is all about. And what's curious about the shoe, if you, earlier when Jupe at Jupiter's Clam shows his little museum, the shoe is in the glass, levitating on its toe, just like he saw it. Shout out to Jimmy the Jackhammer. I didn't catch that. We talked about the movie afterwards, and he said, yeah, it was in the glass standing on its end. I said, damn, really? So what does the shoe mean? I have a guess. I think it's just indicative of supernatural elements, a supernatural force making contact with man to set about the evolution. Just like 2001 A Space Odyssey, the monolith is a supernatural intelligence making contact with the chimp, making contact with man, turning man into the star child. There's a lot to unpack with 2001 A Space Odyssey. I wrote a whole book about it called Kubrick's Code. You can get it on Amazon, Audible, or you get it free if you join my Patreon or my VIP section, link in the show notes. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or go to IlluminatiWatcher.com and sign up for the VIP section. You'll get a copy of that book either way for $5. Wow. What a great guy. Now, if you read up on this, the script called for this to be something, an incident that motivated Jupe. Because he actually thinks he witnessed something special, and probably because of the shoe. They call it a bad miracle. That's what OJ says in the film. It's a bad miracle. And Jupe is, you know, in some ways, we don't know if he's worshiping animals, because we find out he's sacrificing horses to the UFO. But either way, he's monetizing the spectacle of the shoe that was part of this tragedy, but he seems to be cool with it because he's like, look, I'm getting paid, whatever. And he also seems to think at the same time he was in contact with God. That's the supernatural forces. That's why he's not fully traumatized over the experiences. He's thinking, man, there's something special about me. The chimp killed everybody except for me. He fist bumped me. I suspect that also, the guy who paid $50,000 to spend the night in the museum believed he was in touch with something supernatural too. That's why he spent so much money. Was he doing some kind of sex magic ritual in the room? We don't know. I suspect highly likely. Now, from this scene, we go back to Jupiter's Claim. A juxtaposition based upon what we know about the bad miracle. All right, that bad miracle will parallel. And Jupe, he's putting on his theme show. All right, he got some people in the crowd. It's just like, it looks like a rodeo of some kind of Western experience rodeo. He calls it the Star Lasso Experience. And I'm watching it, I'm thinking, okay, it's like a Western horse show. There's a horse in a bait pen, which I found weird. This is just like Skinwalker Ranch. Skinwalker Ranch had cows in bait pens. Allegedly, for the UFOs to come and, I don't know, munch them up or whatever they're going to do. Probably cut mutilation, right? They do the cattle mutilation thing. And Jupe's talking, and we hear him setting it up for this show for the crowd. And he starts talking about UFOs coming to the ranch. And if you'll notice his costume, he's got a phone, not a photo. He's got an embroidered UFO on the back of his coat, his show coat. I'll put that image on the Instagram too. You can see what I'm talking about. And he's talking about these things, and he calls them the viewers, the watchers. All right, that's a analogous to the watchers from the Bible, from the book of Enoch, the fallen angels. And it's ritualized. This Star Lasso experience is the ritual. He says, look, it shows up every night at 6:13 p.m. Only this time, he's like, okay, everybody, get ready for the UFO show, but we got a little bit of time left, so we're going to do a little pregame. But then something odd happens, and Jupe's like, uh-oh, it's coming early. It's an hour early. Okay, well, everybody get ready. Here comes the UFO. It shows up. Bad news. Bad miracle. It's hungry. It's hungry, and it sucks everybody up. And we witness what I propose to be the most terrifying depiction of UFOs ever put on film. I know. Bold statement. But I can tell you, when I watched it, I cringed. I looked over at Jimmy the Jackhammer. I said, oh, what the hell? The only more disturbing alien movie I've seen was Fire in the Sky, about Travis Walton's abduction. This is either tied with it or better than it. All right. I know I'm overselling it right now, but that's what I felt. Jupe told them before it came, he said, this thing's going to change your life. And boy, oh boy, did it. They end up getting blood sacrificed to the UFO. Ain't that a bitch? Thought they were going there just to have a good time. Now, it's curious. I don't know if I got an image of this or not. In the front row of the audience, there's a guy, and he's got a shirt with the Universal monsters, like, you know, Frankenstein and Dracula and Creature from the Black Lagoon. Now, I argue that this was planted there as well. Because I think the theme here is that you've got images on film, and people watch these films, and they focus and manifest, they focus their ideas and fantasies on these films, and it tries to manifest. Now, under that logic, you'd say, well, Isaac, I don't see Frankenstein walking around. I don't see Dracula walking around. What the hell are you talking about? And I get that. I get that. I'm not saying I know for fact. I'm just saying it's a theory I'm floating. We watch these monsters on film and in entertainment, and in some ways they become reality. Now, there, you could argue there's vampires in real life. If you listen to some of my shows, like I had a whole thing about sex magic. Vampirism is actually a real thing. But anyway, OJ and M, they find out about how all these people, the news is on it, and they're like, all these people disappeared. The news is talking about the ranch, how these people disappeared. And we start to hear some ideas about how when you're dealing with these aliens, you can't tame them. You have to enter into agreements with them, a pact, if you will, a Faustian pact, the blood sacrifice to Satan. And this plays into what the director Antlers was watching on TV, because he was watching all these all-seeing eyes. But he was also watching lots of predator and prey relationship clips of animals eating other animals and stuff like that. So the director, after hearing about the disappearance of the ranch, he's like, okay, I'm going to come film me some aliens. So he gets to the ranch, and they draft up this plan to draw the UFO out and film it, but they're not going to use electronic camcorders because the UFO, the phenomenon, can shut those down. Instead, they're going to use this mechanical camcorder that has like a wind crank thing. OJ also reveals that he's figured it out. He's like, look, we're going to be fine. Just don't look at the UFO. Don't look at it in its eye. It's like an animal. Don't look in its eye. Don't look into the all-seeing eye, which, by the way, is a big old, I don't know, like a mouth hole. The director, he starts singing One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People Eater out of place completely. And what's interesting here is that he's talking about the UFO, because the UFO, it's got one big old eye, and it's eating people. And recall from the beginning of the movie, the Bible verse, relating to the apocalypse and the revelation, and it said the Scarlet Woman was arrayed in purple. The flying purple people eater. Huh. The UFO is the Scarlet Woman in some ways. And now the song's Wikipedia is actually interesting. The song, Flying Purple People Eater, it's about a creature descending to Earth to be in a rock band. Now, I myself am a big fan of David Bowie, and if you didn't know, he has this alter ego called Ziggy Stardust, who's supposed to be about a fallen angel, an alien, who turns into a rock star. So, Antlers, the director, OJ and M, they're an angel. They're setting up this elaborate plan to capture the footage of the UFO, and they're going to use a sort of runway of wacky inflatable arm men, run off car batteries, so that when the UFO shows up, the wacky inflatable arm men will drop down, and they'll be like, okay, here it comes. All right? Got that visual? OJ's like, look, I'm going to get on the horse. I'm going to bait the UFO. I'm not going to look in its eye, so I'll be fine. Very confident. I like his confidence. Now, what's interesting is that the camera provides this high-level bird's-eye view of the ranch as he's doing this, as he's baiting the horse down this sort of runway. And I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but you can clearly see there's a cross-shaped pathway on this ranch. I actually do have the image of that. I was able to find that on YouTube. So go to my Instagram, instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt, link in the show notes. You can see what I'm talking about. It's pretty clear. I mean, it's not a 10 out of 10, but it's a solid 8 out of 10. That's a cross that they put on purpose. Because again, I think this is a spiritual battle between the good and evil. Well, here comes the UFO, and a lot of the movie here is devoted to them trying to capture this thing on film, and a little cat and mouse, and boop, boop, boop. And they seem to have caught it on film, right? And before that happens, again, some of this movie's coming to me that I didn't write down. Before they start this process, a guy on a motorcycle shows up from TMZ, and he's got a chrome helmet on with one single eye. Again, look at the Instagram if you don't believe me. I've never seen a helmet like that, but they found one for the movie, and it's TMZ, and he's like, I'm gonna catch these aliens too. But that's a problem. The UFO shows up, ends up eating Mr. TMZ. Everyone's kind of fighting with it, more or less. They get it on film, but the director, he's not quite happy yet, because he says, he's looking at the sunset, he's like, the light, it's going to be the magic hour soon. And I didn't know what that meant. I wrote it down. I said, whoa, he's talking about magic? You know, very sensitive to that. But I looked it up. The magic hour refers in film to, there's an hour around sunrise and sunset that in film production that the sun's light is diffused perfectly, and I guess it makes for a great shot. And he's like, I got to get the perfect shot. So he takes his little mechanical camera, goes up on the hill to try to get a nice shot of the UFO from underneath. And you know, remember, this guy was really into that predator-prey relationship, the all-seeing eye and all that. Well, he gets his eye opened up, all right. The UFO sucks his dumb ass up. And clearly he's filming the whole experience as it's pulling him up. All right. And he goes into the mouth hole. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to see the inside of this thing from the camera. But then it spits out the footage, the camcorder with the reel of footage. And I thought, oh, okay. Well, maybe it's going to be like in the credits or at the end of the credits, they're going to show it. And not to spoil anything, but they never do. Real missed opportunity there, I think. So there's chaos all over the place. This UFO, it's still like sort of chasing after OJ and Emerald. and it starts shape-shifting into this massive, somehow beautiful ribbon-shaped thing with this hypnotic square mouth. The hole turns into a big square mouth. And Emerald, she baits this thing all the way over to Jupiter's clam. And she unhooks this massive helium blow-up cowboy that has a one eye shut, of course, all-seeing eye again. And the cowboy floats up. I'll put that image on the Instagram, too. I know you have skepticism here. It floats up to the sky. The big, beautiful UFO, it eats it. And the helium makes it explode. Makes it explode. And on top of that, she manages to capture the butterfly shape-shifted form of this thing on a camera in the Jupiter's Claim Western theme park, because there's this well that people could take. They could wind up and take a photo from the well, and it shoots straight up, and you can look into the well, right? Well, she captures it, and she's very happy, and she's very pleased with herself, and that's how the film ends. They caught it on film. Congratulations. Now let's get into the good stuff. I know you're ready now. The conclusion will be, we're going to talk about Hollywood. We're going to talk about nihilism. We're going to talk about the phenomenon manifesting it as per my books. And that alien, we're going to talk about what it means, what it looks like, what it is, what it's based off of. The angels, yes. So this movie, again, one of my favorite movies. I'm going to watch it a second time in the theaters to see how great it was. This is what they call elevated horror. This is highbrow horror movies. And right off the bat, the movie was released July 22nd, 2022. All right? So 7/22/22. 22 is one of those master numbers, like 11 or 33. It's very important to the people that get into astrology and numerology and all that stuff. Like JFK was assassinated on 11/22, the killing of the king ritual. And the number 22 is important to Kabbalah, this occult religion of sorts, a philosophy. There's 22 pathways through the Kabbalistic tree of life. And in tarot, there are 22 major arcana. The major arcana, those are the archetypes, like the fool, the magician, the high priestess, etc. There's 22 of them. And I thought, well, maybe there's 22 major arcana in the film, 22 archetypes. Of course not. There's not 22 main characters. Angel, the conspiracy camera guy, he's kind of like the fool. He's the jester or the madman, of course. He's the madman. You know, he's the funny conspiracy guy. So he's very clearly the fool. Emerald would be like the high priestess. She's the feminine divine. You know, she's the savior of the movie. She saves the day. And OJ, he's the magician. The magician has the power to unify the physical and spiritual worlds when it brings this spiritual angelic alien into the world as bait. He's the magician, brings it and manifests the alien. So I thought that was interesting. And here's another interesting idea to float. The Jupiter's Claim audience that gets disappeared, eaten up, there was 40 people. That's what they say in the movie. 40 people are missing. 40 people got sacrificed to the UFO. But if you included the people in the final scene, the director, that's 41. And if the UFO would have had its way, Emerald would have been 42, OJ would have been 43, and Angel would have been 44. 44 being another one of these numbers, another one of these angel numbers. Angel would have been the 44th. Okay. Kind of a stretch. I'll give you that. This movie, it could be a commentary on Hollywood. It's possible. Jordan Peele is showing us God's judgment on the wickedness of Hollywood and the wickedness of people in general. That opening Bible verse, Nahum 3:6, is about God's wrath on the city of Nineveh for being naughty. And the whole film is loaded down with examples of how gross everybody is, trying to make a profit on everything, even these bad miracles. Jupiter's turning profits on the Gordy Chimp incident. Even OJ&M, the supposed heroes of the movie, they're trying to turn this into profit. They don't care that dad got killed. What do they care? I'm trying to get paid. The only one intrigued by what was going on and who was just in it because they were interested was Angel, the conspiracy theorist, the only good guy in the whole movie. The real hero. Everyone else in the movie more or less deserved to get eaten, in my opinion. Even the 40 people in the Jupiter's Claim audience. Because, look, they were down to watch that horse get tortured in the bait pen. They were cool with that. They were cool with watching these animals get used and abused for their entertainment. So they kind of deserve it. Oh, boy. But, yeah. So there's this commentary about our society and Hollywood and entertainment and the people consuming the entertainment. There's also a nihilism element to this. If you've read my books like The Dark Path, you'll know that nihilism is the path that the Illuminati would take us down to worship aliens. Because officially, Jordan Peele himself said this film was inspired by the bleakness of 2020, which is nihilism to me. I'm going to read you from the GQ article, the interview. I read several interviews, watched several YouTube videos, listened to several podcasts on this Nope movie. They were all shit. All of them. Every one of them. None of them were good. None of them talked about any of the symbolism. So I'm not even going to recommend any of them because they were all terrible. Hell, the one, there was this video on YouTube by Screen Rant. It was like, oh, 20 things you missed. Well, I was like, okay, let's see it. And none of it was good. And the guy didn't even pronounce Jupe's name right. I was like, bro, did you even watch the movie? He calls him Jupe. Like, are you just reading a script? Amateur hour, you know? I'm going to read you from GQ. Very upset. GQ, the bleakness of 2020 inspired Peele to write Nope. During that traumatic, forgotten haze of lockdown amidst an endless cycle of grim, inescapable tragedy. We were going through so much, he tells me. So much of what this world was experiencing was this overload of spectacle and kind of a low point of our addiction to spectacle. And the article goes on to talk about how it's the first film to place black people at the center of a UFO story, which I found curious because the Betty and Barney Hill incident, you remember they were abducted back in 60s. It was a black man, Barney Hill, who was married to a white woman, Betty Hill, in New Hampshire. Which is interesting, right? This is back in the 60s. Now, more importantly, in my book, The Dark Path, I broke all of this down with the entertainment relationship to the occult goals. Because in my argument, nihilism leads to atheism, but man, being the spiritual creature that he is, will fill that void with science. They're pre-positioning science as the new religion. The theocracy. And who's the gods of theocracy? The pagan pantheon of alien gods. And the argument, you know, they're going to present, oh, you know, you can't prove Christ is God. How can you know that? Which I agree. Like, I don't know. How could you know that? You're taking a lot of people's words for truth from 2,000 years ago. I get it. So Christ is God, but you can't prove that. Well, here's the thing. They're not going to be able to prove the aliens are gods either. They won't even be able to prove they exist. They're just going to keep showing these vague signs of alien life and, oh, look, at the universe is so big, of course there's aliens. That's what everyone says. Everyone's repeating the phrase. And I get it. I'm just saying they're going to use that. Let me read to you from The Dark Path. The philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche created the nihilist philosophy that seems to dominate the postmodern artwork and entertainment. But he also had great insight into the reason and method these artists are able to make contact with entities. William Irwin's book called Black Sabbath and Philosophy touched on an important concept, the process of Apollonian and Dionysian practices used to make contact with otherworldly forces in mystic left-hand path techniques. I'm going to read you from that book. Nietzsche argued that a synthesis of the group drinking singing of Dionysus and terrifying images of Apollo made the ancient Athenian tragedies possible. I think we can also find the gods in Black Sabbath and the origin of heavy metal. Black Sabbath was a group of men drinking and smoking and snorting and playing loud music together with frightening lyrics of visions and nightmares and madness. Enough said. So it seems that there is a much darker force that the entertainment industry seeks to make contact with. In terms of nihilism, it's of no surprise to see the desire of exploring these dark arts, since there is no consequence or afterlife to be concerned about. Like Crowley's practices, all methods of magic or esoteric techniques of the ancients and mystics should be utilized to their full extent practical, most specifically for contacting extraterrestrial spirits. Did you catch that? Like Crowley's practices, all methods of magic or esoteric techniques of the ancients and mystics should be utilized to their full extent practical, specifically for contacting extraterrestrial spirits. So, was Jordan Peele in contact with dark nihilistic energy that inspired this film? Seems like it. Whether he knew it or not, it's what he said, the bleakness of 2020. A lot of times they say the best art is created through trauma. Because you're in contact with some dark stuff. And of course, that's what the movie's showing us. The traumatized Jupe with the bad miracle of the shoe, Gordy killing everybody. The traumatized OJ, his dad got killed in front of him by the UFO. That's what they're doing. Contacting these spirits through the darkness. Also, the all-seeing eye. You know the all-seeing eye. We've talked about this many times. The symbolism of the eye represents the awakened, enlightened ones. The evolution of man, enlightened through the new occult religion. They understand why all this is happening. So they show it to us. In fact, there's another symbol that's very similar to the evolution of man, and that is the spiral. And when you go to my Instagram.com/IsaacWeissop, you're going to see that Emerald is in fact wearing a coat during the movie with a big old spiral on it. Several spirals, I should add. This is a topic I've discussed with the spirals. You've seen it in Westworld. I did a video for that podcast for it, I think, years ago. Season 1. The Revenant with the great Leo DiCaprio. And Dark City, which is specifically about aliens, okay? And then there's all these other examples of the all-seeing eye in the movie. We've got the TMZ guy, motorcycle guy, helmet had one eye. The director was reviewing these slides with the one eye, these images of the animals, you know? OJ's dad got a nickel buried in his dumb pineal gland. And the whole plot of the UFO was you can't look it in the eye. Which we're going to learn more about here. Let's dig into this here. Manifestation. Using your illusion. That's what this movie's about. Because officially, the villain in the movie is man's relationship to the spectacle. That's what Jordan Peele said. All right? It's about the grossness of everybody trying to capitalize on this UFO. And in the movie, there's a scene at a diner where it's very strange. If you ever seen that, there's like a thought exercise where you'll see you're supposed to follow a basketball and like different people are dribbling this basketball and passing it off and you're focused on it. But in the background, there's like this guy dressed up in an ape costume and you don't even see him because you're so hyper-focused. It's kind of like that. They're at this diner talking about the UFO and how they're going to capture it. And there's fist fights going on between these two groups of people wearing white and black jerseys, but everybody's ignoring it like it's not even happening. I think it's a microcosm for the film. If you don't look at it, it won't hurt you. Like the UFO, don't look at it, it won't hurt you. You ignore it, you bury your head in the sand. And there's this element of saying that films are manifesting this exact outcome. It's part of the whole plot. They make painstaking reference to this first film ever with the guy on the horse. All the way to the end, the final point of the thing was to capture this UFO in film. That's all Emerald cared about. It's all anyone cared about. Captured on film. It's like the beginning of end of mankind on this film. The beginning was the horse with the guy riding it, and the end was the UFO captured from the well. And notice how these UFO sightings happen, but they're not considered real until they get caught on camera. That's why people always say, like, if you didn't catch it on camera, it didn't happen. Reality only happens on film. So in a way, our reality is shaped by film. Like Gordy slaughtering everybody on the camera, on the set. Made it real. The interesting, one of the interviews I read, there was the sound editor for the film was actually the same one from Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson movie that I rant rave about all the time and featured in my second Alien book, Johnny Byrne. He was on the Toolkit podcast, and he said, talking about the aesthetics for this UFO, he says, if you believe that it happened, then it actually did happen. Which is one of the underlying themes of my books is, you know, choose your own reality. Kind of quantum thinking, kind of law of attraction. It's kind of how that is. But yeah, the Under the Skin was in the second Alien book that I wrote, and it actually featured that black abyss that you see in Stranger Things season 4, which I also plan on doing an episode about here soon. But the beginning of the film, Nope. We see the first film ever, a reference to it, the black man on the black horse. The end of the film shows OJ, a black man on a black horse. And, by the way, getting filmed on a manual, old-timey camera. So it's kind of a bookended thing, this topic, this idea. And remember at the very beginning, they showed us the ranch, and I told you it's clearly under a triangular formation of stars. Well, in magic, that triangle is the triangle of manifestation. When a magician is making magic time happen, the magician stands in a circle and it manifests an entity in the triangle. All right, so Crowley was doing. And if you, in Use Your Illusion 1, my first Alien book, we talk about Peter LaVenda and Tom DeLonge and the books they're writing about the phenomenon. Because they float the idea in the first, what's it called? Secret Machines War, I think. They float the idea that a lot of UFO crafts are described as triangular, and they say, what if that has to do with the manifestation into new worlds? Isn't that interesting? So the triangle-shaped craft is another reference to ritual magic and the manifestation, which is, we talk about Jay-Z and Beyonce, they show us the triangle of manifestation as well. The final part of the film, Emerald's trying to take down the UFO. She's running for her life, but she still insists on getting a photo, and she does this at that well at the theme park. The well is symbolic of the feminine divine, the feminine nature, and the subconscious in terms of symbolism. So it makes sense to have the female heroine of the film defeating the bad guy and getting what she wants through the well. The subconscious manifestation. And the well, by the way, also appears as an all-seeing eye from above. And again, I'll put that photo on the Instagram. And that inflatable cowboy that takes down the UFO has an all-seeing eye, emphasis with the one eye closed. So to sum that up, did Jordan Peele read my books? I doubt it. I really do. But you never know. The whole point of the books was to cover an angle of spiritual angels or demons being the UFO phenomenon and the manifestation of them through occult practices, magic, and even film, which is basically the plot of this movie. Making the UFO real by getting it on camera, on footage. And in fact, remember he called the first film star ever Alistair Haywood, a fictional name he came up with, indicating he's clearly familiar with these occult ideas. You know anybody named Alistair? I don't, besides Alistair Crowley. Let's talk about this alien now. Let's talk about the UFO. Very fascinating. We don't know if this thing is Lovecraftian. We don't know if it's primordial. We don't know if it's futuristic. All we know is it's a big, bad son of a gun. One thing that it is, it's a shapeshifter. It's like Stephen King's It. it's like the archons of David Icke's theory. It's like John Carpenter's The Thing. In fact, at the end of the movie, the camera does this interesting trick where it shows OJ in this final showdown with this UFO, and he's traversing that cross, right? Remember that? Well, that reminded me of It, Stephen King's It. If you remember in the TV series, they have their showdown with Pennywise. I believe it's, I don't remember, it's been a long time. I just watched the making of It, and that's where I saw it. There was the scene underneath in the subway where they fight Pennywise the clown. They meet him at a crossroads, at a cross underneath the ground. Now, you could argue that X is the Antichrist mark of the mark of the beast. If you look into Kenneth Grant's writings, it's usually a circle with the X inside of it. But yeah, I mean, similar, right? The shape-shifting evil entities. And the mouth that this UFO uses to suck up people turns into a square because it's just shape-shifting. But I think it was considered the eye. And this ties us into 2001, A Space Odyssey, referenced multiple times in the film. Like I said, the UFO shows up and you'll hear the buzz. The chimp uses violence, just like at the beginning of 2001 when the monolith visits the chimps. It teaches one of the chimps how to beat the crap out of another chimp with a bone, a femur bone. And that's how it learns dominance and violence to defend its water hole. Kind of like this supernatural shoe in the Gordy's home with the chimp using violence. And then, of course, we've got the fist bump. That's the creation of Adam, the evolution of man. And then, of course, the square mouth of the UFO is like the monolith. Now, what's interesting is that the monolith, so if you look at some of the conspiracies about 2001, they say the monolith, which is like a rectangular shape, is the same dimensions as a movie screen. Now, I don't know if the UFO square mouth shows us that exactly. Kind of a stretch, maybe. Just something to consider. Parallels to the film screen, which is the idea of 2001 A Space Odyssey, is that Kubrick was doing the evolution of man through film. Very similar to Jordan Peele's movie. And Jupe calls the UFO the viewers, right? It's what he calls this phenomenon, which is an interesting parallel to the idea of the square mouth or square eye to the camera that has the square aperture, whatever you call it, lens, trying to capture the UFO's existence to prove it's real. And then you see this in the film Arrival, which, again, when they get sucked up into the UFO, they communicate to the alien squid things through a big rectangular screen. Now, to hear specifically what this UFO was supposed to look like, I'm going to read to you from Wikipedia. On July 25th, 2022, /film, confirmed via Jordan Peele's production notes for Nope that the design of Jean Jacket, that's the UFO, they name it Jean Jacket, because they named the horses and they named the UFO like it's a horse. Don't ask. Says that the design of Jean Jacket and the principal premise of the film was specifically inspired by and based on the throne angels from the Hideaki Anno Gainax mecha anime series Neon Genesis Evangelion. I don't know why they don't just say based on Neon Genesis Evangelion. And the resulting frame, must be nerds, anime nerds that wrote this up. Like, just call it Neon Genesis. I know what that is. I don't know what this other crap is. And the resulting franchise, in particular their hyper-minimalism and biomechanical design flair, and Sahakuil the 10th Angel. So what are they talking about? I don't know, because I've never seen Neon Genesis. But throne angels from Neon Genesis Evangelion, specifically Sahakuil the 10th Angel. Let's look into that. It says Neon Genesis had extraterrestrials they called angels, which is just like what the ancient alien show tells us, which is what Angel, the conspiracy guy, says, the Watch. See how there's parallels between ancient aliens, angels, demons. Well, when you look up Sahakwil, you'll see it's very similar to the butterfly form of the UFO. And guess what's in its center, the mouth hole? Another all-seeing eye. Yes. Again, Instagram.com/IsaacWiseUp. Take a look. When you dig through this, you'll find out that Neon Genesis and Nope were both based on the Book of Enoch. Let me tell you why. I'm going to give you a quick recap on what the Book of Enoch is. It's some ancient text. There's three books, three chapters, kind of Enoch. There's the second and third book were written after Christ in the Middle Ages. And the third book of Enoch is a Gnostic text. But between the Old Testament and New Testament, there were some texts written by the Jews. And this is where the first Enoch chapter was written. All right. Now, Enoch 1 through 36 is the book of the Watchers, and it tells the story of the 200 Watchers who fell from heaven, led by Samael and Azazel, to Mount Hermon. They mated with women, they created cannibalistic giants, which led to the flood. It revealed the occult secrets to mankind, the implements of war, occult magic, and cutting of roots. Because you can't cut roots, I don't know, don't ask. And Enoch gives judgment to the Watchers because God told him to do it. And then Enoch 37 through 71 is the book of parables. It recounts Enoch's cosmic journey through the heavens and the vision of God's throne and even the Messiah. All right, those are my notes because I actually was going to work up a show in the book of Enoch. So someday I'll finish it. But it's interesting because they're talking about the Watchers, the fallen angels, and you heard Jupe say that he calls them the Viewers, which is very similar to the Watchers. Now, the Wikipedia for angels in Neon Genesis Evangelion says that Sahakwil was inspired by the angel of the same name mentioned in the Book of Enoch's third book as the angel of the heavens. However, if you read the Book of Enoch, chapter 69, it talks about the angels, and I didn't find one reference to Sahakwil, so I don't know where that came from. It was Wikipedia? I don't know. But in that reference, in chapter 69, it says, "And after this judgment, they will terrify and anger them, because they have showed this to those who dwell on the earth." All right. And you'll notice that there's a parallel there between that Jordan Peele Nahum Bible verse about judging with this. "And behold the names of the angels, and these are their names. The first of them is blah, 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 blah." Well, the 10th angel is not Sahakwil, it is Azazel. Azazel, which is a fallen angel. All right, and here's where it gets weird. The early Jews would sacrifice animals to this fallen angel. What? And if you read my first alien book, Use Your Illusion 1, you'll read how there's a chance that maybe, just maybe, they want to sacrifice humans and babies to the aliens, like the pagan gods of the Old Testament, like Moloch, like the owl god in Bohemian Grove of Minerva, which you see in Jupe's office. Remember the owl. They also compare Azazel to Prometheus with the exchanging of knowledge of weaponry so man could learn to kill others. Again, see the 2001 link. And we talked about Azazel in my Dr. Sleep analysis back in 2019. And then in July 2020, we talked about Azazel in my Ghislaine Maxwell Part 2 about Crowley's New Hampshire toad ritual. I know. If you're new to all this, you're like, what kind of crazy talk are you talking about? We talked about Leo Zagami's crucified frog and alien apocalypse. No big deal. Check it out. I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes if you're new to this. Or just scroll back to July 2020 and look at Ghislaine Maxwell Part 2. Now, Peele cited the Bible at the very beginning of the film, right? And the verses about judgment from God against us for being unclean, with the ultimate evil and uncleanliness being the Scarlet Woman from the Book of Revelation. A spirit that Jack Parsons, who called himself the Antichrist, tried to channel to earth to bring about the New Age and end Christianity. And what did they say represents the New Age? UFOs. Crowley's Aeon of Horus, Parsons said the UFO symbolizes the age of Crowleyanity and his religion Thelema, which is the age of self, the focus on self, not on any external priests or gods. That's what he says. It's all about yourself. And isn't that what all these characters are doing in the movie? They're focused on their money, trying to get paid. They're worried about themselves. And the UFO sucking people up is like the rapture. If you look at an older, like they call it the technological frame of reference, back in the day, they wouldn't know what that meant, the UFO. They just see people getting sucked up and, you know, maybe they thought that was what was happening. Oh, they're getting taken up with God. No, they're getting eaten, bro. They're getting eaten. The character Angel, the conspiracy guy, played by Brandon Perea. We find out his original character's name was Artie, so it begs the question of why they would change the name. Because his character Angel was like the literary angel of Arthur Kessler. There's another link, Artie, Arthur Kessler. He's the literary angel, his name is Angel. Guiding the protagonist in the movie, helping them set up cameras and pursue this alien contact. Yeah, we already talked about the camera, the director trying to get the shot, willing to die for his craft. No pun intended. Then I watched till after the credits to see if they ever played that footage of him getting sucked up into the alien, and they don't. But they show an ad for Universal Studios. I guess they've got Jupiter's Clam set up there. Go check it out. See what you think. We also see, this is my last point here. The connections to the horses of the apocalypse. Remember Otis Sr., Keith David. He died while being on top of the white horse. He ushers in. He's the messenger of the end times. So that's why we see the white horse. We know it's on and popping. Here we go. Now, in the Four Horsemen, the second horse is red, the third one is black, and the fourth one is the final horse. That's the pale horse. And, of course, you don't get the red or the pale horse in this movie, but you do get the black horse. That's OJ's horse. And the point being is that the Book of Revelation is about the end times and God's return and all these signs of the end times. And if you read, I'm going to read you from the Orthodox Study Bible. It's a passage in Revelation 6 about these horses. Says, the seals are consequences of man's condition, an overview of conditions manifest since the birth of the church, which will continue until Christ's second coming. The four horsemen personify the scourges, which through the prophets God has threatened as judgment on the faithless, war, famine, plague, and natural disasters. So is Jordan Peele pointing to a much larger question about humanity and its inevitable destruction? Like, there's no way to get off this path. Is this how it's going to look in the end? Nobody's concerned about death and destruction as much as they are about getting the content. Because that's kind of what they're showing us in the film. The revelation or the apocalypse is meant to unveil that God is the source of all revelation. It could be. Speaking of getting the content, check out those images on my Instagram. Be sure to like and subscribe. Instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt is where you can get it. I got those images. I do that for any film that I cover. I put the images on there. And look, if you made it this far, it means you've appreciated this analysis on some level. And like I said, I listened to many podcasts on this subject, watched several YouTube videos of people trying to explain the symbolism of the film, and they're absolutely atrocious. I'm not saying that to brag. I don't think I'm the expert of all experts, but I do put in that extra work and those extra hours to find these things and explain them to you, to try to make sense of them. And I know what kind of product I offer, and I know what kind of product YouTube offers. And you and I both know YouTube is a propaganda machine, and they serve you up with nothing that is going to enlighten you or make you think about anything. It's absolute garbage. 99.9% of all the people out there talking about this film aren't really talking about the real symbolism. They're not talking about the messaging. They're getting it completely wrong. And I think it's by design. In fact, like I said, we're clearing 10 million downloads with this exact episode. A huge honor. Thank you for listening. Even though, and if you go to my website, IlluminatiWatcher.com, there's a Start Here tab, and you can read my whole story going back to 2011 when I started this, how everyone banned me. Google banned me from the front page. YouTube kicked me off. Vimeo kicked me off. And all the stuff we've had to deal with over the years. And I think, and if you've listened to this whole show, you know, I'm trying to be pretty rational about things, giving you sources, giving you information, not telling you it's true, but saying this is something to think about. What do you think? And I think we're waking people up to this hidden symbolism, and it's a good thing. Just don't start using my research to support political nonsense and storming capitals and crap like that, because I don't condone that. Politics is just a big distraction, all right? So if you like this show, I've got hundreds of these types of shows going all the way back to 2014. So subscribe to this podcast, because I'm going to keep doing this. I've been doing it for years. Keep doing this. If this is your first time, hit subscribe on this show, all right? And start working your way back through them. And if you want to save yourself some time, you can sign up for the ad-free. You want to support the show, support the research, get ad-free version of the show, support your boy. You can go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, or you can go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP tab. Both of those will unlock over 100 bonus episodes that I provide only for those. The VIP goes all the way back to 2014. The Patreon goes back to about 2017, I think. And both of those, you will get a free ebook copy of Kubrick's Code, where I talk about 2001 A Space Odyssey, Clockwork Orange, The Shining, and Eyes Wide Shut, the movie that got Kubrick killed, supposedly. And you'll also get The Dark Path. I mentioned both of those books multiple times during this show. So, look, you need to start figuring this out. So sign up for one of those systems. Link will always be in the show notes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for helping me clear 10 million downloads. I don't even know how to say thank you for something that huge. I mean, that's such a big deal. Honestly. Yeah, subscribe to the show. Stay woke.